My name is Salma Iftikhar. Today is December 17th, 2010, and we are in my office at the Mayo Clinic. I work on the 17th floor here in general internal medicine. I was born and brought up in the town of Kashmir, which is in the state of Jammu and Kashmir in India. So it's in North India. I was born in Srinagar, grew up there, to physician parents, and went into medicine when the time came and did my med school there. So that's essentially a background. I come from, I have two siblings, an older brother and a younger sister, and at the current time all three sibs are in the United States as immigrants. So after my medical school, I got married, and I married my husband, Iftikhar, who also professionally is a doctor. And essentially, both of us decided that we would pursue further studies. And United States was the ultimate for further medical studies. And he pursued trying to find a residency here and got into one in New York. And so that's how the initial thought came, that he would come. We came to New York at the end of 1991, and he started his residency there starting 1992 for a year. And then we had heard about Mayo Clinic a lot along the way in medical fields and medical news. So he decided essentially to pursue whether he could get transferred from New York to here. And so he was accepted. We came here early 93 to Rochester, Minnesota. And this is where we have stayed since. When we came here, I was needed to take the required medical licensure qualifying exams, and that's what I did while he was going through residency. And then once I was qualified and got enough scores that I could apply, I applied to the Mayo Clinic itself, just because we wanted to be together in one place too. We arrived at JFK Airport, and in itself that was huge and a huge experience. And so I think it was overwhelming to just accommodate that and get your bearings and kind of get oriented quickly. I think having friends helped. Having friends also sit down and tell us, okay, we've been here 6 months or we've been here a year, and this is how it works. First, you will go tomorrow to this office and get your social security cards made. And so that, things are in line for that first paycheck to come in. Oh, you have to go over there to get your pictures taken. These are the stores too. I think it eased us in. It eased our entry in. Many other people's, I think if it were not for them, I would find it very hard. When we came to the States, I think the prior notions that had been put in our mind about United States kind of stayed with us in New York during the one year we were in New York, in that we were very cautious when we moved out. We were very cautious to be too free. And not that there were any personal experiences or anything, but I think it just made us very, very cautious, very. And then we decided to move. So then the next few months went into planning the move. I have to tell you that we arrived in Rochester, Minnesota on December 22nd or 23rd. We drove from New York. We didn't have any furniture, so we drove with our bags and TV and whatnot, and arrived in Rochester, Minnesota on, I think it was 22nd. The snow was high, the snow banks were piled up in the middle on the sides, and we arrived at noon. And immediately we wanted to stop and get a meal before we had to check into a hotel for a couple nights before we went in. We were able to get into our apartment. I wish I remembered, but I think it was one of the hotels in downtown, and we just, whichever one we found, went in. I think my husband will remember which one it was. But we went in, and the moment we sat down, there was a waitress who's coming in and going, "Hello, how are you? What can we get you?" And that was such a warm experience for us, sitting down. We both looked at each other and I'm like, have we arrived at the right place? Because, yeah, that was something that I think our minds had just gotten to that habit of not knowing that kind of being welcomed like that sort of experience. So that suddenly just calmed us down. And here we are traveling, you know, tired and everything, anxious. Where are we staying for two nights before we move and everything? So that was a very, very pleasant experience, I think, to just be welcomed. And all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, all right, that's a good thing to begin with. And that experience has just stayed throughout.
It's amazing how just a small little gesture like that can be so formative.
It did. And it almost, and I don't want to be labeling, but it almost gave us a feeling of being home and almost told us we did a great thing moving out of New York. And we're like, okay, all right, that's so. We took a deep breath and we're like, okay, now we can, you know, we can talk and we can chat with people and things. So, and that experience, I think, since then till now, it has been the community has been very warm and welcoming throughout days into months and years. It has been a very, very positive and pleasant experience. Just, I think, the way people treat you. And that was an experience. It was good to start off that way and then keep it that way, and it has been a very, very pleasant experience throughout.
So I would guess that the Mayo Clinic brings a fairly global community to a town this size. Talk to me about that a little bit.
So when we came in 1992, and so 1993 is when I'm talking about, Rochester was still a very non-diverse town, let's call it. The Mayo Clinic hires from all over, yes. So within the clinic you would find, you know, doctors, workers of all communities. But the rest of the town was still very Caucasian. But I think still there was a lot of, I think, acceptance within work area and outside too. In that they wouldn't eye you or look at you as you're the only foreign person around and who has come to our town. At home, I think religion and faith, yes, it's almost an inborn thing in our societies. But also I have to say that we grew up in a very tolerant environment. In that at school, our classroom would be a group of 50 kids, 50 girls, because it's a girls' school, and we would have 20 Hindus, 20 Muslims, 5 Sikhs, and 5 from other faiths, and we're all friends. And some are good friends, some are bad friends, you know about that, those groupism. But the groups would not be completely based on religion. They wouldn't be totally Muslim, totally Hindu, or anything like that. And that's how we grew up throughout. Yeah. And that model continued. And that's how Kashmir is, but that's how the rest of India is also. There may be a majority of one in one place and another in another, but typically, there is a lot of combined kind of activities. So, for example, if there is, as you say, was religion a big part? Yes, you know, we're taught our basic beliefs. I was required to, you know, learn to read the Quran as I grew up. I was required to learn the prayer, the salah, and how to perform it, and basic teachings, but that was through private and home tutoring, not in school. It was not part of school curriculum. And at the same time, neighbors would have Hindu party. We were all invited and part of it. We would have a Muslim Eid party or any celebration for Ramadan or any big celebration. They would all be part of that. And so the streets would be just, the kids would be having fun on the streets, just not, you know, not particularly the three homes in this neighborhood are celebrating and others are not. So that way, a very good fun without any bias growing up, I think. And that I think, again, was a very positive factor in helping us when we left home in acculturating elsewhere. When we came here, the Muslim community was small, and mostly by word of mouth, you came to know there's that one, and you would connect. And through work, if you would find someone, Indian or Pakistani, then you would connect, make phone calls, and say, okay, let's have a get-together or something like that. So yeah, it was a very small community, and it was mostly, you know, small groups. But even as years have gone by, I see that growing and growing and growing. And so now, yes, we have a fairly large Muslim community here. And so much that you don't get together. And, you know, you cannot bring the whole community together as one group in a home or something. What we do now is we have rental halls or something like that. So if we want a bigger get-together, then that's where it is, because the community has grown. We used to be able to manage in someone's basement before, but not anymore. We take frequent trips back home to Kashmir to stay connected with family, because his parents are there, mine are there, some of the siblings were still back there. So we made an effort to go home every 2-3 years. So one fine summer, the boys were there, the other cousins were playing cricket, they picked it up, they brought their bags here, and in the neighborhood parks, they catch a few other people and teach them to play cricket. And so it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling that, you know, you don't have to be completely, you know, giving up some things. You can still hold on to those. They love the great Vikings fans, and every Sunday we have a 3-hour sit down on the couch, watch the Vikings play. And so that's another something I love about our family, is that, you know, they don't play football, but bringing that into them, and that feeling of root for the Vikings. So I think there's a good blend there. We try at home as much as possible to speak Urdu, which is our mother tongue. And so speaking it at home, all three do pretty good. The boys are still a little bit not as fluent, but they understand it. If the cousins come, they can hold a conversation and things. So that's another thing that I like about our family, is that we've been able to stay bilingual and give them that, at least, so that they're not disconnected. I think the kids understand how much it took for us to come from where we were, you know, back in Kashmir, and where we are now. I think they respect us for that and realize that it was not a simple task, you know. It's a journey. It's a lot of planning. It's a lot of hard work before to be able to make the grades, to be able to apply, and a lot of hard work since we've come here. And it's not been an easy journey, I have to say. It's only now that we're getting comfortable But I'm not sure how much, being that they're born and brought up here, I'm not sure how much of an impact it's making on them. So they understand. We talk about it a lot, only in the sense that we want them to have some basic values, you know, that life isn't easy. It's hard work. Every morning when they say, no, I don't want to go to school at 7 a.m. in the snow, you have to bring out those stories of how you, you know, did what you did, how you traveled through snow and how you went to your tuitions and your school and kept pushing for good grades. And so I think those stories come and they realize and they're reminded constantly. I think I'll still have to wait to see how much, you know, how much they tell their kids to know how much of an impact it's making. But I think it is deep down they understand that, you know, there are some roots back there, and those are strong roots, and roots that at least we as first-generation immigrants won't give up very easily. Even though we are Americans now, but they identify themselves as Americans of Indian origin. And so, I don't know. I think I'll have to wait and see. They're still young and formative, so far so good, I have to say.
What are your dreams for them?
Personally? Yeah. The one thing I keep telling them is we came to America because this is a land of opportunity. We tell them stories about how when we were growing up, the only two pathways were anyone who had good grades in school, the only two pathways were you were either a doctor or an engineer. Okay, and so people, unfortunately, who were not making such good grades would take on one of the arts areas and try to develop something out of it. There wasn't much opportunity to pursue it to the extent you could. So the one thing I definitely tell them is it's a land of opportunities and we are not going to restrain you in any way. But the opportunities come only after a lot of hard work and knowing what your passion is. So I keep telling them, I decided to be a doctor, knowing my parents were doctors, but I decided personally, probably by the age of 10, I knew that's what I was going to be. I have a sister that's younger than me, and by the age of 10 or 12, she knew she was not going to be a doctor, okay? So what I want for them is to excel in whatever they choose. And that's I think, something they'll hear from me again and again and again. My Rehan is very good in math, my middle son. And so for him, I keep telling him NASA is going to go back to the moon in a few years and you should be right there. But that's our little thing at home. And I tell him, take me to the moon, and that's my dream for him. But I think they're doing very well so far, and if they keep their focus, I think whatever passion they show, we'll be right there supporting them and taking them further in that. Because I know, I keep telling them, whatever you choose to do, you'll do really well in that. And my goal is to keep them straight and on the path and make sure that, you know, that they realize that that's at a certain point you have to choose and that they choose right and then they just choose it with a passion and take it to the ultimate level. And, of course, right now it's a lot of sports and they dream of being in some professional sports. And I have told them, you know, if that's what your passion is, you know, we'll be the first people out there cheering you along. But then I would want to see you at the top. So I think that's every parent's dream is that kids at the top. We are hoping Alia would choose the medical profession, but we're not going to force her. I think she has the aptitude for it, but she's not found it in herself yet. So we hope that comes. And the youngest one, right now I think we're still trying to figure out what would be good for him. He wants to be a writer. Again, as I said, I will not change your direction. If you find a passion and you want to pursue it, we'll be right there with you. If we say being Muslim in Minnesota, I think I have been allowed to stay as an individual, which is great. I don't think anywhere in our experience religion came in as a factor ever. And that's how I was always comfortable growing up, in that your work, your profession, your daily dealings with anyone you come across, you do not bring religion in. And it's a very personal thing to me. How I pursue may be very different from another person who is also Muslim, but how they practice their religion and mine. And so keeping it private and allowing me to do that has been good, has been good. So I can take it to the level I want, or I can keep it as little as I want. So I feel comfortable that I have, I actually feel very, you know, relaxed that no one will actually look at me and think of me as a Muslim, and hence my opportunity will be reduced. So that's a good feeling, actually. At least that's what I can say of this community and this work environment. If there is anything, it is subtle. I wouldn't notice it, but it hasn't come across as that. So it's been a very good experience. We still, as a Rochester Muslim community, we have our few times a year gatherings where we organize as a group. So we have a group which is called RMCC. It's a Rochester Muslim Community Circle. And as a group, what we want is we want to be part of the larger community. And we want the group to be able to, yes, teach about Islam and teach the rest of the community about, you know, the practice of Islam. What do we do, rather than them having all these questions? And so want it to be kind of very open. And as the RMCC has become a sort of an organized community circle where we organize gatherings, get-togethers, kids' activities, women's activities, things like that. You know, Ramadan gatherings or Eid gatherings and things. So it's good to have a group of people working together and saying, okay, we are going to put together an Eid event or something like that. And then we can rent a hall, have our event, to socialize. And that way what happens is the whole community has the opportunity to 3-4 times a year come together and see who's new, who's been here forever, who's doing something new. And again, for the kids, it's a great opportunity to mingle with everyone. We are hoping as the circle grows and expands and more people get involved, that it could be an open for all event. That's the vision, and that'll happen slowly, but we're still putting it together. And we're also trying to find a stable building, sort of a place which will be identified as the RMCC building, sort of a community center area, so that everyone knows that, you know, if this event is happening, it's happening there. Or if they have questions, there'll be a little office that they can come phone or gather and say. And so it's sort of a resource as well as a community center. So that's our vision. So we're working towards that.